This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
3, 2, 1.
And now, Sci-Fi for Me presents Sonia Rodriguez.
Did IQs just drop sharply while I was away?
Jason Hunt.
There seems to be no sign of intelligent life anywhere.
This is Sci-Fi XY.
Welcome, everyone, to this, our next to last episode of Sci-Fi XY here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Jason Hunt here. And on the other side of the Ansible, Sonia Rodriguez.
Hello.
And you have an idea for a topic. You ran across a TED Talk video that you sent me.
Yes.
So, okay, there's my setup. So you set the table for us here on this.
Okay. I know that part of sci-fi genre is gaming.
Yes.
And I actually am not a gamer. But I was told, since I do play a game, I would be classified as a gamer. And I I've never saw myself as a gamer.
Yes, somehow I don't see you as a gamer either.
Yeah, it was really funny to have this conversation with this this person, and because we really get into this game, Clash of Clans, very popular game.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, you know, takes pride in their clan and their. And their little village and whatnot. And there's all sorts of things to build this village. He said one thing to me that made me believe that, you know what, I think I understand what's going on. Last summer, I switched cell phones and I lost my clan.
I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah. And I was depressed. I was in a state of depression. And I emailed the support for Clash of Clans, and there's such great people over there, you know, the tops. And they, you know, they asked me questions about my clan to make sure, because they wanted to make sure they gave my village to the correct owner.
Right.
My village, excuse me. I keep saying clan. I'm part of a clan, but actually I'm a village first.
It takes a village.
Yes. Yeah. And I remember getting so depressed. I was in a state of depression because the boys were playing, my husband was playing, and they could see my village, but we just didn't have, I didn't have access to it. And
right.
So it'd say, oh, mom, you know, your village is still there. And so finally, I get an email back from tech support from Clash of Clans, and they asked me all these questions that I knew. I knew every single, asked me anything about my village. I knew how many heads I had, how much this. And they they gave me back the code to enter into my phone to get my village back. And it was a glorious day.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yes. So it was kind of funny. When I went to this this conference, and this woman started to talk about the emotional feeling you get from playing games, and how she wants to use, she truly believes that gamers can save the world, and I really understood it. And if I hadn't have been playing Clash of Clans, I don't think I would have gotten it. I think I would have thought it was just a bunch of malarkey, and she's gone nuts. But
and this person you're talking about
is
McGonagall.
Yes, Jane McGonagall. And she has written a book called Reality is Broken. And I'm actually going to read her book because I'm so intrigued with the whole gaming world, especially since I'm a teacher. And what she said in her TED Talk really struck a chord with me, because she mentions in her TED Talk that from grade 5 through high school, a child spends over 10,000 hours in school.
Right.
And that same child can match that time in gaming. And I was like, wow. That's a lot of time to be playing video games.
And that 10,000 hours in gaming, if I remember right, she said that 10,000 hours is in a year.
Yeah.
Is that right? So in a year of gaming.
No, I think the span of I could be wrong. I thought that was the equal amount of time.
Right. Yeah. From the
fifth grade to when a child is 21.
Right. That's 10,000 hours. And if I remember right, she was saying that 10,000 hours in a year is the average how much people spend online. The gamers spend playing a game.
Mm-hmm. So it was. I was like totally in awe of that number. Thinking, oh my gosh, so they spend the same amount of time playing a game as they do in school, learning a trade. And they tell you that, you know, you have to do something for 10,000 hours for it to be, for you to become an expert.
Right.
And so I was like, wow, so these kids are becoming expert gamers. And in our day, you couldn't get anywhere playing games.
Right. No.
Our generation... And I'm going to give our age away yet again.
We do that.
Our generation was all about get off that game. It's not going to get you anywhere. I can't tell that to my boys. That's not true. Playing video games in this day and age can't get you places. It has to do with, you know, programming, computer programming. There's an entire industry where they can work, you know, making really good money, either playing video games or inventing video games or figuring out the glitches in video games. And the way this woman wants to take it, she wants to take it in a whole different direction of trying to hone what they're getting good at. You know, yeah. What she wants to hone. What's the word?
Using those skill sets with a real world application. So the things that they're learning
can be applied to solve real world problems.
Right. So
she invented three games. The third game was the most impressive, I thought, was called Evoke.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about it gives them all kinds of real world problems, and they have to deal with these real world problems and generate problem solving skills on how to live in these realities that, you know, virtual realities, and then take those virtual realities and apply them to the real world. And I just, you know, it's amazing to me. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. And it's ironic too, that you in the TED talk that you're talking about came from 2010. And she's talking about how, an online and multiplayer environment teaches, social skills, mm-hmm. and group project skills,
yes.
and all of that. And then ironically enough, after I finished watching that, ran across my Facebook thing in this article from, I think, the New York Times, about how Tinder and those online, the mobile dating apps are killing any romance in relationships. And I thought, interesting. Two completely different online... applications and completely different set of results that people are getting out of this stuff. So,
yeah.
Well, and this is after Tim and I have talked on a number of occasions over on H2O about how the internet is making us stupid and rude. So it's very interesting.
Well, see, that's what's different, because if you get on the internet just to be mean and rude and just to comment on things, you're not engaged in a game.
Right.
Games have rules. And she mentions that in the TED talk, that when you're playing a game with somebody, there's an element of trust. You have to trust they're going to play fair, and they're going to play with you,
right.
and they're going to play until the end of the game. And, you know, there's an element of, you know, cordialness, you know, and it's different than just, you know, communicating online with
yes.
someone you don't know. You're actually doing something. Than just sit and, you know, and I see that too, because, you know, I have friends that I play games with online, and it's a different sort of relationship.
Sure, the dynamic is different.
yeah, you know, it's just, and it's just a very interesting component that I thought would be great to discuss, since kind of gaming goes into the genre of sci-fi. I was looking at a list. I was trying to find it here, but I just, of course, you know, while we're on, you know,
of course,
during the, I can't find it now, but I came across a list when I was doing some research of all the games, the games that became movies.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of them.
It's a lot. I remember thinking, I didn't know it was that many, but there's a lot of games that were never, that didn't come, because I was trying to really, really, I'm losing all my words. Make sure that the list was not coming from, like, it didn't come from a comic book and then became a video game and then became a movie.
Right.
No, it was strictly from the mind of a gamer who created this game, and then it became a movie. And it was never anything else before. And I know some people, you know, they're all about, yeah, you know, somebody was saying that they didn't like the fact that, you know, they're making movies from rides on Disney that, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, it became a movie. But my whole thing is, like, if it works, then what's wrong?
Right.
If you had a good time watching those, what's wrong with it coming from a ride?
I don't think anything's. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's an indicator of where the mindset of Hollywood is right now. Because yeah, you know, yes, we do remakes and we do retell stories over and over again. It's a cultural thing. It's something that we've done since, you know, the beginning of history of all time.
Yeah.
But the source material tends to be something that. Well, like, say, okay, there's a movie that's going to be coming out based on emojis, you know, the little emoticons and stuff.
Awesome.
It's a complete, I mean, it's an emojis movie. I'm like, how in the world are you going to do something like that? Because Pixels, which was a very cool short film, apparently has not turned into a very cool full-length feature film.
Right.
You know, people are blaming Adam Sandler for that. People are saying that it's, you know, it's a terrible film that does that doesn't respect the source material. And then you've got things like Battleship. We're gonna get a Chutes and Ladders movie. We're gonna get Candyland. No, it's not Chutes and Ladders. We're gonna get Candyland.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, why? You know, at some point, I'm waiting for the Pez movie to cross over with the emojis movie, because at some point, you know, we're going to get something like that, because right now we're getting the Tower of Terror is being remade.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, yes, Pirates of the Caribbean, the Caribbean. And so yeah, it is interesting to see where people are pulling things from.
And I thought, when I was looking at the video game movies, I was completely in awe. Now they're not great movies, but I can't believe how much money they made.
Oh yeah,
these movies. You know, the Mortal. You know, you got. I'm trying to remember what was on the list. I think it was, of course, I think you had the first one. The first one I remember was Super Mario Brothers, and they made that movie a long time ago.
Oh yeah, and everybody would like to forget that one.
Yeah, but it still made a lot of money.
It did.
And the Resident Evil movies.
Yep, and they're making a new one of those.
The Lara Croft movies.
Yep. And
I keep wondering if they're ever going to remake the Mortal Kombat movies.
They might do a new one of those. Mortal Kombat keeps getting rebooted. They've done two or three different versions of that. But you talk about making money. A lot of these can find new life on Netflix. They just laid Wing Commander at our feet over on Netflix. That, of course, based on a video game.
Right.
And it was supposed to be a big franchise.
My son was very excited to hear that they're going to make an Assassin's Creed movie.
Yes, they're working on that. They're working on a Warcraft movie.
Okay. And then I forgot, someone else had told me another. I think they're coming out with a Tomb Raider. They're going to reboot Tomb Raider.
Well, they've rebooted the video game, and she's got a new comic book. I haven't heard. I'd need to check. It's possible. I think we are going to get a new Tomb Raider movie that's more in line with the reboot of the video game, where she's a little bit more realistically proportioned, let's say, and it's more, you know, everything's got to be more realistic, but yeah, less Angelina Jolie in terms of stature.
And I have not heard anything, but I have no doubts that someone's out there writing a Minecraft script.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. That is happening. Yes.
Oh, gosh. See, and then, of course, there's the new one, the Plants vs. Zombies.
Plants vs. Zombies. They're getting a movie. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah.
Angry Birds. They're getting a movie.
Oh, my gosh. All based on gaming.
Yes.
And I just, you know, it's something that is kind of really blown up. It's just gotten bigger than I ever thought it would get.
Well, it makes you think and wonder how much of an impact, you know, not only does gaming have on the media industry, the entertainment industry, you know, entertainment media, film and TV, but to go back to McGonagall's point of using gaming as an environment for real world solutions for things, and I don't see a whole lot of that happening. I mean, she's got great ambitions, more power to her, but I don't see a whole lot of. And maybe I'm just in the wrong circles. I'm not seeing it just because I don't run across it. But I don't see a whole lot of real world solutions for problems. And people sit there and go, "Oh yeah, we developed this in a video game environment." That's not happening yet.
I say give her time.
Well, it's been 5 years since she's done that TED Talk. And the Institute.
Her new book just came out.
Right.
I forgot what the name of it is. Super Better or something like that. I can't remember what the name of the new
book. Yeah, Super Better, I think it is.
Yeah, yeah. I'm to be honest with you, I don't know what she's covering in that book. But I'm pretty sure she's on the same track.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting premise because, you know, you see in science fiction stories where people will use holographic simulators to you know, recreate crime scenes, or they use holographic simulators to explore certain parts of space, or to recreate certain scenes or whatnot. So it's not an unusual
pilots use simulations
thing.
All the time, you know. Sure. It looks like video game when they're doing in their simulators, and NASA too, they do all their simulations and it looks like a video game.
Exactly. And you know, the Starfighter Command, they recruit their Starfighter pilots that way too, so you know.
Oh my God.
So there's definitely precedent. It's just, you know.
We talk about The Last Starfighter just a little bit in another podcast.
Yes, yes. And you know that's coming to a TV show now. Starfighter Command. It's going to the Starfighter Chronicles, I think is what it's going to be called. It's set in the same universe, so it's not a reboot. And it's not a remake, but it's in that story universe. Connected somehow. I don't know. That's all the details that we've got. Yeah, that's coming. Well, and you go back and look at the sequel to War Games. It was the same kind of thing, where it was a virtual reality or a online multiplayer game environment to test how the world could destroy itself. So
That's the first thing when she starts talking about what she was talking about. That's the first thing I thought of, was War Games and how the computer had to teach itself that going to nuclear war, nobody was going to win, you know. But that was more about teaching computers how to, I guess, assess a problem. Whereas this, she's kind of working towards people using computers to fix real problems in the real world and not virtual problems.
Right. Well, and I think too, the application of the gaming environment probably is one of those things where if people think that they're in a game, and this is kind of this is an idea that was played with in Ender's Game, where mm-hmm. you had the kids playing video games, controlling the combat scenarios against the alien invaders.
Right.
And the kids see it as a video game where they're actually really controlling spaceships and fighter pilots and guiding the war. It's an actual real life circumstance, but they don't know that. They only know that it's a game. And of course, it raises some questions if we're going to get into things like war games or, you know, combat scenarios that are part of a video game environment. And that goes back to the criticisms of the video games. Do they desensitize us to those things?
Oh yeah. See, that. Yes, here comes my mommy.
There's nothing wrong with that. Go ahead.
That is why I don't allow the children to spend a whole lot of time on video games, because I've got the mentality. I've got the old mentality that it's not going to get you anywhere. you know, the kids are blowing things up or watching things blow up, and then they watch themselves blow up, and it's all, okay, I got one more life.
Yep.
Okay, I'm back. I'm like, okay. Although,
you know, I played Asteroids when I was a kid. I got blown up all the time. And, you know, I survived.
Yeah, the graphics during that time, if your little ship blew up, it wasn't as.
Yeah, it wasn't as graphic. It wasn't. Yes. Yeah, it wasn't gratuitous. I mean, that's true.
I mean, I watched my older son play Halo. I mean, it looks real. I mean, the graphics are just so, I want to say beautiful, but that's not really the right word.
Well,
I mean,
it's highly detailed. It's very well formed. But yeah, see, here's my question though.
Playing the MLB or the show, because he plays sports games and war games.
Right.
And so I go in and he's playing MLB the show. I thought he was playing a video game, and maybe that's my bad eyesight too. But I thought he was watching a baseball game, real baseball game.
Yeah, the graphics engines on these have gotten really sophisticated.
Exactly.
But here's the thing.
Real that it's like, golly.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If you're going to propose that video games and a video game environment or a virtual reality environment can be used to solve real world problems, how do you do that and maintain people's immersion into those worlds unless you're shooting things or blowing things up? How do you make those games both appealing as games and then also effective as solution generators? I think that's where you've got to find the balance. You've got to find the mix. And this one, World Without Oil, I think is one of the games where it's a survival game where you have to deal with an oil shortage.
Right.
And it uses a lot of real-world statistics and information to drive the scenario, and you have to adapt and adjust to how things are in this virtual world where there is no oil. And, of course, for us, being of an age where we grew up during the oil crisis of the late 70s, that's going to be a completely different thing for somebody like me to play that game as it would be for somebody like my kid to play that game. Because my kid didn't grow up in the oil shortage of the 70s, has absolutely no idea what kind of havoc it could really cause.
No idea. I was seven. I didn't care about oil.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like, who's not going to have any idea? I don't have any idea. Because I even though I grew up, that was an adult problem that my parents protected me from. I don't remember it at all.
Yeah, but it's those kind of things where, you know, the Iran hostage crisis, you know, things like that. Those scenarios where there's a lot of fear in the world because of things that are going on. And now, of course, nowadays we've got, you know, terrorists and nuclear arms races with people that shouldn't have them and stuff like that. So there's a new set of things to be scared of, but how do you game that? How do you come up with something that sits here?
you know, I think it's actually the way she's did it and how she's doing it.
Right.
It's just like anything. It's going to take time. It's going to, because what she's wanting to tap into is that those critical thinking skills that come out of you to make you win, to
right.
get that epic win, to get that epic feeling that I've solved the problem. And she wants to get that emotion and that drive and that, I think she's dealing with, she's trying to get and tap into that emotional feeling that you get when you are getting close to an epic win, you're getting close to that. She wants, that's what that, she needs that emotion to transpire into problem solving skills, critical thinking skills to come up with real world solutions.
So she's searching for a way to tap into the hidden strength within all of us. Hope she doesn't use any gamma radiation. Right?
But I think it's going to work. I mean, of course, it's going to take some time because anything like this takes time. And of course, everybody just wants to sit around and play a game. But, I need to read up on those. I wonder if they knew that they were being studied, or were those people that were playing the game, was it just a game?
I think it was my impression was it's just a game, and that, you know, the results of the game, the habits that are formed, are things that stay with you and have a real world impact. Now, how much of that is effective, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5 years later, 10 years later, that's going to be something that's definitely worth checking out and seeing.
Right, exactly, because you know, if she came up with solutions to these problems, or the people playing the games came up with solutions to these kinds of problems, and down the line this problem happens, you don't think they're going to come knocking on her door saying, "Hey, what did these people come up with when this happened in the game?" Just to kind of test to see. Because, you know, any sort of, I was reading, because I really dwelled into going, it's the net theory. You know how you can do anything as long as you have a safety net?
Right. Yep.
you know, if you cure cancer in the virtual world, killing so many people along the way, it's okay because you didn't really kill anybody, you know?
Well, and looking at the website, it's the Institute for the Future. It's IFTF.org. And, you know, they've got video games that model out scenarios in healthcare and in food management, food innovation. So you've got, you know, places like in the third world, you know, in Africa where you have food shortages. You're coming up with laboratory environments where your gaming is the kind of thing that they can use for developing, you know, different ways of managing resources, water shortages, information technologies, all of these different things, and they've got quite a bit of research and work that's doing
to tap into what all our kids are doing. It's going to be such a different world when our kids grow up. We can't tell our kids, no, don't play video games. It's not going to get you anywhere. Because it can. It's going to get them places. It's going to, you know, it's going to do things. And now, us playing Space Invaders, yeah, I don't know. If
that didn't get us anywhere.
It didn't get me anywhere.
Didn't get me anywhere either, I tell you. I did one... I did one time. I remember playing Space Invaders. I got up to 23 extra lives because my score was so high, and then I got called away to fold laundry. And this is back before the games had pause buttons on them.
Oh.
And I lost all of them, but I think I was down to 3 by the time I got back. It was like, oh no! But you know, I didn't learn anything from that.
Yeah.
So gaming has become much different nowadays.
The single game that I play, aside from, I say I'm not a gamer, but I play a lot of math games with my students because we do a lot of Shepherd software, and you know, we do a lot of those online games, and we play a lot of those in the classroom, and their faces are different when they're doing problem solving and they're doing their project-based learning. They have a very stern, concentrated face. But when they're playing those math games and they know they're going to get, and it's not even real, Jason. It's a sticker. It's a fake sticker.
Yeah, it's electronic. It's an emoji.
It's, you know, if they know that if they level up on that math game, they're going to get a sticker. Their whole strategic way of how they fix it so that way they can level up and get one more sticker. It's like, it's different. Yeah. And I wish they had that emotion for everything else in my classroom. But it's only when they play those video game, those math games on the computer or on my smart board. Mm. And if I could tap into that and put it everywhere in my classroom, it'd be great. You know, I think it would be just more enjoyable for them.
Yeah. Well, you know, it could be. And from the work that these people are doing, it looks like they're angling toward that same kind of result. Just using video games as petri dishes, I guess, laboratories where they could figure right. these things out. I tell you what, that tone that you heard was our last spin of the wheel. Wow. So if you guys have any ideas or any thoughts on gaming being used in real world applications to make things better, you can level up by sending us an email, scifixy@scifixme.com, or you can call our hotline, it's 573-42-SCIFI, and you can connect with us on all of the social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Google+, YouTube, Tumblr.
That was seven.
That was seven, okay, I did it.
You know, I counted.
There's
you know how I love to count.
Yes. So, and we are the one episode away from our last one of the summer. And then we've got to sit down and decide if we're going to keep doing these because you actually got to go back to work.
Yes.
So if you want to continue, if you want to hear, those of you who are listening, if you want to hear more Sci-Fi XY, let us know. Send us an email. Give us a comment. Drop us a line, and in the meantime, you can also go over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/scifixme, and if you are feeling so inclined, you can pledge your support. It's kind of like subscription crowdfunding. We use that for technical improvements, more equipment, getting to more conventions so we can cover more news. And that's over at patreon.com/scifixme. And, of course, you can get all of the latest news headlines over at scifixme.com. We post fresh content almost on a daily basis, and we have fun doing it most of the time. except,
we have fun,
you know,
all the time.
We have fun all the time. Yes, we do.
You don't have fun all the time.
Well, I'm not a fun person, and people don't have fun around me. So that's why we get other people to do stuff, and I just sit in the basement. Right?
Right.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us this time out. Jason Hunt here and Sonia Rodriguez.
We will see you next time.
Yes. On Sci-Fi XY.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.